From WNYC New York Public Radio, I'm Leonard Lopate. This is just one segment of the Leonard Lopate Show, but every interview is available on demand at WNYC.org. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org.
WNYC On Demand is supported by Open, how American Express serves small business. Open offers a range of products and services designed exclusively for small business. Details at 888-779-OPEN or open.com.
The gurus of how-to are here, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors of Brooklyn, New York.
Brooklyn, New York.
I'm speechless.
Really?
Yeah. First time in my life.
It's a Christmas miracle.
The Ubells visit us once a month.
Yes, they couldn't take us anymore.
To keep within our budget. And they answer your home repair questions at 212-433-9692. We also have a quiz. And what else do we have? Anything you want to talk about before we get going?
Well, it's getting cold.
Really? Who could tell? Well,
it's finally.
So you want to help me finally with my air conditioner?
No, hey, people are saying, "Oh, it's so nice. The winter is going to be so short." But we could pay for that because if we don't have a good winter, we may not have enough water. Because you need snow and you need all those things in order to make this environment work well.
So, I also believe the payback is what it is, and I think February is going to be miserable.
And what the utility company is going to do, since you didn't use enough energy, we'll have to raise the prices. They have to have some sort of an excuse.
But is the both of you come here to depress me? Is that it?
Enjoy the nice weather.
Anything nice?
Wear a sweater. But anyway, as far as this time of year is concerned, we've been given a slight reprieve, but the thing I'm noticing around in my inspections and my consulting is that people really have no ability to use their storms and screens. By now, we're in the middle of December. The glass on the storm windows should be down. The screens should be up. They should all be in the right place. We're not opening the windows as much. So there is a major energy loss. Another thing that people who own their own homes who have, a lot of times when people have a boiler that used to make domestic hot water and now uses a separate freestanding water heater, a lot of times those boilers were not converted or rewired. So the boiler still thinks it's making hot water and will be on for days at a time when it doesn't need to be on. Like, for instance, the last couple of weeks, those people who have those situations will shut their boilers off in the summertime, and they'll turn it on sometime around October. Well, actually, since October, the amount of degree days that we've had has been very low considering the time of year. And these people are wasting a lot of money. They need to have their boilers rewired and bring an electrician in here who's familiar with heating and air conditioning wiring.
What should people do about their air conditioners?
Well, you have to tell – oh, go ahead.
Should they say block off the air conditioners so that they don't get drafts?
Well, you can block them off from the inside. You should not block them off from the outside, because what happens is you block them off from the outside, they get filled with moisture, they don't evaporate and start getting corrosion on them. But generally, the air conditioning units that are now made, all you have to do is close the damper on it so you don't have any fresh air coming in, because that's like an open hole from the outside to the inside. That could help a lot. But getting these insulated covers to snap on the inside of the house would be a perfect way of saving energy.
And people who have central air conditioning units, all we recommend is just put a piece of plywood or something with a couple of bricks over it to stop the leaves from falling in. But the sides don't wrap up with plastic, because you want it to ventilate. You want the moisture to get in there to get out. It's kind of like when you go swimming with your wristwatch and you get that fog inside and you can never get it out. Well, we want you to be able to get it out of the air conditioner so you don't have a problem.
And getting back to the rewiring, if you do call your heating contractor, tell them that you want the boiler to operate on what is known as demand operation. In other words, when the thermostat calls for heat, That's the only time that that boiler should turn on. We've come across houses where they make separate hot water, but the central heating boiler is on all summer long because they don't know that this boiler doesn't shut down by itself.
And I think, and I, not that I'm a conspiracy theorist, but I think that a lot of times if oil companies are doing the rewiring or even the gas company, they're not telling you this because you will use more gas and oil during that period of time. So I'm a little paranoid, but
now
just enough.
All the phone lines are already filled. Would you believe that? So we should probably ask the quiz and then start taking some calls.
Okay.
All right. You want to do the quiz or you want me to lie?
Your turn, Al.
My turn. All right. In the language of construction technology, what is the name given to the type of adjustable hardware that is used for supporting pipes from ceilings and wall brackets? It is sometimes resembles a horseshoe or a stirrup. This is a special bracket for hanging pipes. What do you call that?
Okay. And the number here is 212-433-9692. This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm here with I'm Leonard Lopez here with
Alvin
and Lawrence.
I didn't know that.
And you were going to say something, Lawrence?
And the term pipe hanger is not acceptable. Okay.
No. Or pipe cleaner for that matter.
Deep cleaner if you come from the other
way. So let's start taking some calls. And we go first to Corey from Manhattan. Hi, Corey. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hi. How you doing?
Hi. Hey.
I've got a 2-inch square tile shower that was in the building when we moved in.
In other words, the tiles are 2 inches, not the shower.
Right. Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Now the building is a '60s high rise. It's basically it appears to be basically reinforced concrete with plaster on the walls.
Uh huh.
The guys who put this shower in, instead of taking it down to the concrete and putting the tile on the concrete, they installed the tile on the inch of plaster that's on top of the concrete. So as water got infiltrated, the plaster turned to mush and the tiles got loose.
Now, let me ask you a question. Are you sure that this has concrete walls?
Yeah, because when I take out the tiles and take out the inch of plaster, I get the concrete.
Well,
because reinforced concrete is very rare in New York City, isn't it?
Well, reinforced, but that
not what, as not as to answer Lenny's question, not as floors, but as walls. Usually, we build them slab and post construction. So you build a slab, then you put a bunch of columns on top. You build another slab, but the interior walls tend to these days be a metal studs with sheetrock.
Yeah, this is back in the '60s.
Yes, I understand.
Yeah, but that white material, I'm not really sure, because sometimes the white material could be white Portland cement, and it looks like plaster. Sometimes it feels like plaster, but it's really white Portland cement, and it's generally, hopefully, it is waterproof. But when you have the tiles that are getting loose or moving around for whatever reason, because the mastic or the interface between the tile and the mastic and whatever is down below is incompatible or get dissolved by water or something like that, the best material to use to reset them is the white silicon. White silicon works very, very well, and once that sets for about 24 or 48 hours, nothing is going to move those tiles out of place.
So he should just leave them right where they are, just put the silicon on?
Yeah, just maybe take out the tile and re-cement them with the silicon caulking. It really works very, very well.
But are you actually looking to do a complete rehab of this shower?
Yeah, what I'm trying to do is replace the tile. But you see, when I take the tiles out, there's about an inch of goop.
Yes.
That's the plaster.
It sounds to me that there's some type of, and it may not even, it may be just a bad mix of what they put in there that's now falling apart.
He's having a domestic crisis.
He's having a domestic crisis. That's right. I thought that would be in domestic, but that's okay. But anyway, let me finish my thoughts.
Go ahead.
Okay. I'm thinking that what you really do need to do at this point is you can't really attach the tile right to the concrete. You do want some type of interface like Wonderboard so you can flash your tiles properly into your shower bottom. So chances are that when you do the shower over, you're going to probably want to remove all the tile and all that soft material and then put a material like Wonderboard or Duroc. It's a concrete wall material, and that works very well. And you just attach that directly to the concrete and start over.
But there are other things that you can do. There is you put a new lead bottom, or maybe you can get a plastic insert that fits exactly perfectly and set it into it, and you can put the tile on top of that. There are so many ways of doing that, and usually a good plumber or tile guys know the exact technique that you have to use.
Guys, that's not what I'm asking. What I'm asking you is I just want to fill in that space that was previously occupied with the goop.
Epoxy putty would work great for that.
Thank you for your call.
Epoxy putty is the best.
And Mary from Congers. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, wow, you're
Mary,
where?
Mary, I used to live in on Route 303, Valley Cottage.
I was on Route 303 a minute ago, so we
What's
missed
up?
You up here. We've got a 100-year-old house, and in the basement, there's a poured cement floor over what was probably an earth floor,
mm-hmm.
and the walls are cobblestones with some sort of mortar in between. And I'm getting what I think is moisture seeping up through the floor, little wet spots on the basement floor from the high water table. And then the mortar and the stones themselves are kind of crumbling and sloughing off along the walls.
Yeah. What you have there is a couple of things going on. Do you have a sump pump in the basement?
We don't, because we never get any standing water.
Right.
It's not a grade, and it slopes away. It just mm-hmm. sort of percolates up from the floor, and we actually had the foundation from the outside sealed and some perforated pipe laid
mm-hmm.
around the front of the house. So I'm more concerned about, I guess, the structural integrity of the foundation.
Right. But the first thing is, let's get rid of the water that's on the floor. And I think a sump pump would generally help, because what you would be doing on the inside of the building is lowering the water table for that area. So if the water is coming up, maybe all that's coming up is this moisture. But if there actually is some water there, it will go into that sump pump area and you can pump it out. As far as the crumbling foundation, moisture is coming through. Even though you sealed the outside of the foundation, moisture is being drawn through the foundation. What I would recommend is that you actually you want to kind of stop this erosion from occurring. So I would actually get some kind of chicken, you know, have a mason come in and apply chicken wire or, you know, a lath to the foundation, and then cement coat the foundation. That way we'd get a much cleaner look on the inside, but it would also, the wire would be mechanically fastened to the masonry unit, stone or what have you, and you would have a much more substantial base on which to put it on. If you don't put the lath up and just spread on mortar mix or some kind of cement coating, it's probably going to start to flake off.
Okay, and would the sump pump have to be dug deeper than it normally would?
No, I would probably go deeper, down.
The deeper you go, the better it's
going to work. The better, but 2 feet would probably do it.
Okay.
Yeah, and just have, and they do make these dry well inserts. They're made of plastic, so you don't have to pour a whole concrete form there.
Thank you so much for your call. John, calling from a doctor's office in New Jersey. Is it your office, John?
Hello?
Yes, John.
Lenny and the Gurus of Heart 2, how are you?
Good. What can we do for you?
I'm actually calling from my bathroom in Glen Rock.
Sounds like it.
not down the street from Valley Cottage, but not too far away.
Yes, we know that. Jersey.
Anyway, I'm calling because I'm literally about to sweat two copper pipes, and I need the Gurus of How To quick lessons on sweating, because it's one of those tasks I try to avoid most of my life.
It's a very simple thing. The first thing is you need some either sandpaper or fine sandpaper or steel wool, and you have to clean the actual pipe, and then you'll need a cuplink, which is also has to be cleaned on the inside, and then you have to get some what they call a special acid, like rosin that goes around the pipe, and then heat the torch until that stuff melts together, and then put the two pipes together, the cuplink and the pipe inside, and heat that up until the solder actually runs around it. It is, if you do a couple of them, it's so simple, it's ridiculous. But if it's a water pipe, make sure that you buy the kind of solder that's leadless solder, so that none of the lead gets into the drinking water.
Okay, because I have a 50% tin, 50% lead, so that's not...
Well, let me ask you a question. Is this a water pipe?
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, don't use that.
Okay, you get get some lead-free solder.
Okay, and while you're at the hardware store or home center, they make a special brush for the size pipe you're working with to clean out the inside and also the outside. And the stuff you're looking for is flux is one of the terms for it. And it's you put a little bit around, and when you hit the torch at the point where the pipe inserts into the fitting, and you hit it at that intersection, and once you see the solder, run around, you're done. Stop, keep putting
should
more
he,
in.
Should he do a practice run before he does it on the real thing?
That would be great. He could do it in a more controlled environment instead of on his back and having the lead drip on him.
I'll tell you the
question.
Are you a doctor?
No, I'm not, and I've never played one on TV. The question I have is, when I took the old valves off, there's a little dab of solder that's left on the bottom of the pipe. Do I heat that and clean that off?
No, leave no, that. Well, no. After you finish soldering, heating it, and it's run all the way around, then you could take a cool rag and just wipe it right off at that point.
And we thank you so much for your call.
Mm-hmm.
A reminder that the quiz is, in the language of construction technology, what is the name given to the type of adjustable hardware used to support piping from ceilings, walls, I guess, and walls? It sometimes resembles a horseshoe or a stirrup. And we have a caller who says he thinks he knows the answer. Laszlo from Brooklyn, what do you say it is?
I'm not exactly sure, but I think it's called a clevis hanger or a clevis something, but I'm pretty sure it's a clevis.
How would you know that?
Because
clevis.
I do punch lists for a contractor.
Oh. It's called a clevis hanger.
Clevis, okay.
But it depends
but
on
clever,
but it depends
you.
On what part of Brooklyn you come from.
Oh, that's true too.
If you're from the southern part, it's clevis. But if you come from the northern part, it's clevis.
I'm northern part.
Well, then you got lost.
He got migrated.
Well, what does he get for this?
He gets absolutely nothing.
No, yeah.
he gets the knowledge of knowing a job well done.
Yes,
what he gets is save
money, save energy
by Al Ubell and George
Merlis.
Oh, great!
And we're going to put you on hold. My producer will take your address so we can send that to
unless
you.
Unless Lenny hangs up on you, in which case,
I'll put him on hold this time. I thought nobody was going to get that. Well, we're going to go to a little break, and when we come back, we'll be taking more of your calls to the Gurus of How To, Al and Larry Ubell, at 212-433-9692. Cooking is one of the most hands-on ways to celebrate the season, and in order to get in with the spirit, we are holding a holiday recipe swap with Chef Michael LaMonaco. Submit your favorite recipes at WNYC.org, and then tune in next week when we'll discuss some of the best submissions on the air. This is WNYC and WNYC.org.
You've been gone such a long, long time. How you gonna fix this broken heart of mine?
We're back with the Gurus of How To, Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, also known as Accurate Building Inspectors, Brooklyn, New York, and that's how you can reach them, accuratebuilding.com.
That's us.
That's right. And also, you know, there's a lot of the home repair questions that people are asking. It's now published on our website. So if anybody wants to dial in to our website, it's Ubell, accuratebuilding.com. I almost forgot my own website.
But you know what's so funny? You can see the generation of him versus like conflicting and plowing head on into today's technology. Dial in? When was the last time you even dialed a phone, let alone, or dialed a television? I mean, the closest you have to dial these days is maybe on a radio, okay?
Or a soap.
How do you dial into an internet
site? Everybody in that show where the person has this dial phone and she tries to press the buttons and she doesn't know how to, she says, how does it work?
Okay, we're taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Dial in now and give us a call. Eve from Inwood. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm living in a just pre-war Art Deco apartment with plaster walls.
Sounds fabulous.
So this would be Inwood, Manhattan, right?
Inwood, Manhattan, right.
As opposed to Inwood, Long Island.
Exactly.
Okay.
Okay, so the walls, and I moved here a couple of years ago, the apartment is badly in need of painting. However, you could see from the past, there are many, many cracks, big mm-hmm. and small. It's like someone took a kind of spatula type thing mm-hmm. and put some kind of plaster-like
right.
material over the cracks, but then the cracks are incredibly visible. Let me ask you a question.
Are these cracks on the walls or the ceilings?
There are cracks on the walls and also cracks on the ceilings.
Which are the worst one, on the walls or the ceilings?
The walls.
Okay. Those, what I would do with those is, the problem is that if there are cracks there now, you need to basically gouge out the cracks and then with a nice wide spackle knife, at least 10 inches wide, have your painter, whoever does this, reapply some some joint compound, which is another word for spackle, but we're not allowed to use spackle because someone owns that name, so we say joint compound. Okay. We're not really allowed to say sheetrock. We're supposed to say drywall. Okay. But anyway, and have them with a nice wide trowel, try to feather it out and smooth it out. The ones on the ceiling are more difficult because the problem with the ceiling is that the ceiling is basically being hung from the structure above it, so gravity is always having its way with it. On the walls, the wall itself supports itself. So at the ceiling, if they start getting really bad, applying more joint compound will just make those unstable structures less stable because you're loading them up with more weight.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But there's also another technique.
Before you finish, let me just finish my thought, and then you can go because I know you're going to go in a different direction than me.
I know that.
Okay, so let me finish my thought. It might be, to get that ceiling to look better, it might behoove you to actually apply new drywall to the ceiling with nice long drywall screws and get a nice smooth job. It will cost you a little more. Do you own this apartment or you rent?
I rent, but
that's a problem.
I've been fantasizing about drywall.
Yeah. Okay, well, a lot of people have these days. It's very lonely out there.
You keep the plaster up. I mean,
you don't have to remove the plaster. The new drywall and everything will hold everything back into place. Anyway,
another technique that is being applied. Dad.
A lot of people don't know that you're my dad.
Yeah.
Okay.
And Larry's my son.
Dad. What were you going to say?
All right, son.
Okay.
Anyway, there is another technique called canvassing that many of the real old-timers, painter old-timers, that can really do a really great job, and where they just take off all the high points and then they canvas the walls and the ceiling, and then it's put on like wallpaper, and then they paint right over that. It comes out gorgeous.
Wait, so it's like they're laying down canvas the same way you'd lay down canvas for a painting.
Right, and they glue that to the walls and the ceilings, and this makes a monolithic look to the entire room, and it really comes out great. It's a lot less expensive than using like quarter-inch or half-inch sheetrock to the walls and ceilings, because then you have to tape and spackle with all
and
the joints.
And it seals everything because you got that whole
and it also
canvas.
Sometimes louses up the interface between moldings and windows and
right.
framing. But the canvassing really works well if the plaster that is underlayment plaster is still intact.
Okay, Eve, thank you for calling us. Chris from Manhattan.
And
Hi.
By the way, before Chris gets on, I don't like sun. I prefer Little Pisher. For that much more, okay?
Okay, we have Alvin and his little pisher here.
Oh, he's
yeah. You choose which one you want to speak to, Chris. I'm getting
you're
out of this.
It. Chris, what's up?
We have brownstone with a metal cornice across the top, below the roof,
mm-hmm.
which is about 100 years old.
Well, it's probably as old as the house.
Yes.
Okay.
That's about the age, 1910.
Yeah.
It's rusted through in numerous spots, and it's been badly patched in one spot, so it looks to me as if it can't be saved and needs to be replaced.
Let me ask you a question. Are you in a landmark area?
Not yet.
Good.
No.
Okay, this is the time to get moving on this.
Yes.
Okay. They do make, if you look on the internet, they make new fiberglass and styrofoam applications that look exactly like the old ones. and you replace them, and you can't tell the difference, considering that it's four stories up. No one's really going to look at it that closely. And basically, the cornice, the materials they use there are metal and wood. And before everyone writes me in about how, you know, it's not what it's traditional, and you should spend, like, to rebuild a cornice that he's describing, it's probably about $50,000.
Absolutely.
Because you're building a piece of furniture to a certain degree. So they make these new ones that will match or close to match what you have there now. You apply it to the building. It's much less weight, and it will probably last for another 100 years.
And the outside facing of that is a special vinyl coating to prevent water from going into it.
But
and
it's also
made to receive paint.
Exactly.
That's what I was going to ask. Does it really weather well?
Well, it's fiberglass. I mean, we make boats out of them.
It's made out of the same.
So I would definitely.
Now that gets pitted sometimes and on boats, and that's why I was asking if.
Yeah, but that's also because it's sitting in salt water. I mean, I don't think you're going to have the same. You also don't have barnacles sticking to the front of your house, so I think that you're probably going to be in pretty good shape. And again, if you know, you have to have a maintenance schedule of painting. But I think that from everything I've heard from everyone who's used this material, and I do this talk at New York Technical College, the Anatomy of a Brownstone. I'm doing another one in February, and I've spoken to a lot of people who've done restorations with that material, and they've had a lot of success with it. So I've never been involved in the installation of them, but from all the people I spoke to, a lot. Of success.
I'll guarantee that it'll outlive you.
Okay.
Thank you for calling
us, Chris. No question about it.
Karen from Manhattan, you're on the Leonard Lopate Show.
Thank you so very much. I want to sand and stain the parquet floor in my apartment, which is in a 42-year-old, quote, fireproof building. And I'm not sure if I should polyurethane or simply wax. I remember from friend experiences that polyurethane scratches, and if I just wax, then I can buff out scratches. But I'm not sure if that's based on experience of 20 years ago, and it doesn't happen these days.
Well, I just polyurethane my whole apartment completely, all the wood floors. We had it scraped, and it really looks good. But the big trick to that is that you have to put down almost two or three coats of the polyurethane on the floor. And they come in two different types. They come with a satin finish, and it comes with a high gloss finish. The high gloss finish will show a scratch to it occasionally if you drag something that's going to scratch it. But if you put on the bottom of all the furniture, the main furniture, these special Teflon sliding devices, mm-hmm. they will prevent you from scratching, because most of the time they get scratched when you move a piece of heavy furniture. The satin finish will have a softer patina look to it, and it also shows less scratches.
Thank you so much.
But you need two to three coats to work.
Great. Okay, and quickly, is what you said about canvassing ceilings or putting down drywall also going to be the case in a fireproof building around 42 years old? Because we have problems with plaster falling
yeah, you
from
could,
the ceiling.
Yeah, because Typex sheetrock is fire resistant anyway. Typex sheetrock is what we put over boilers in one and two family homes to give the building to give that area a 1 hour fire rating. So that shouldn't be a problem. That shouldn't compromise the fireproof nature of the building.
Thank you for calling us. Eli from Queens Northern Boulevard.
Well, that's being specific.
Yeah, well, that's what it says here.
Do we have which block he's on?
Eli?
Eli?
Well, you know, in Queens, you can always tell
the block and lot number
by the address.
I live in Fresh Meadow.
Okay.
Well, see, now we're getting better.
I'm a car in Northern Boulevard, but I live in Fresh Meadow.
What can I do for you?
I have a hot water heater that I installed, a 50-gallon heater, O.A. Smith. Mm-hmm. And it's the overflow valve is always discharging water.
Now, we're having problems with the sound, but
I got what he said.
The overflow valve is discharging water.
The relief valve, which is actually the temperature pressure relief valve,
right.
It's broken.
Right.
It's broken. You need to replace it.
So is that it? So
that's
does
it.
He get a plumber
just,
in?
That's
or?
It. Just get a plumber. Well, it's not a hard repair. Just shut the water off to the water heater, and then you know shut it off. You know turn it all the way down. Turn water out. Drain some of the water out so it's below the relief valve, and then take the relief valve out.
You could just unscrew it and then
unscrew it and put it back in.
If that's a hot water system, that
no, he said a water heater, freestanding water heater.
Yeah.
It's the pressure temperature relief valve
is defective.
It's defective, and he needs to get that. He needs to.
So he just goes to a hardware store and says, "I want here's the one I took out. Give me another one."
Yeah, because they're designed to have a pressure level of about about 75 to 80 pounds, and city pressure is generally between 40 and 60 pounds, so it shouldn't be a problem. It shouldn't be dripping.
We go now to Pedro from Brooklyn. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello, Pedro.
Hi, how are you?
What can I do for you?
I'm curious about the average cost to replace a window in a typical classic brownstone.
Well, it depends on the size of the window. Are you in a landmark area?
Sort of, yeah.
It's not. Well, it's either you are or you're not.
Well, it's Prospect Heights.
Okay, but we got to find out if you're on a landmark block. That's the first thing.
I don't think so.
But the second thing, okay, if you are in a landmark block, it's generally just the front of the building that is landmark. Not always, but generally it's just the front of the building that's landmark.
Now, is it likely that his window would be a standard size?
No. But there are, you know, but these days there are no quota. The quote unquote standard size is what the different manufacturers decide are going to be their particular standard size. And the standard sizes between, let's say, Peller, Marvin, Acorn, or Anderson are completely different. That's their standards. As far as your size window, what do you want to replace it with? Are you replacing it with a wood double glazed or an aluminum double glazed? And how tall and what's the dimensions? But I would say probably ballpark for one window to be replaced, you're probably talking between $300 and $600 depending on the size of the window.
And it could go up as high as $1,500 if they have to do something special to make it fit in.
Yes. But generally, I think, I mean, when you're counting up windows on a building to do a renovation, restoration, you're probably talking about $300 to $400 per window.
Right.
Okay?
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
This is WNYC and WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate with the Gurus of How To. We're going to try to get as many calls in here as we can.
And getting just on that water heater question, I've just been involved with a friend of mine who's thinking of converting his building from which has an internal domestic hot water coil to a separate water heater, and the prices that he gets for replacement costs are all over the place. And I called up one of the plumbers I know, and generally speaking, a cost of replacing a water heater, a 50-gallon to 60-gallon water heater, 65, I don't think they make a 60, should cost someone around anywhere between $1,200 and $2,000. You pay more than $2,000, you're probably going to you should get some more quotes.
You can go buy your own hot water heater.
You can definitely buy your own water heater, and you have someone
install. It'll be a lot less expensive.
Yeah. Sears and Roebuck puts it together. Home Depot has it. Almost everybody.
You go there, they're about $300 to $450 to purchase it. And I figure you're usually about double the price there about is what it would cost to install it.
And if you are buying a new water heater, separate water heater, make sure they put an electrical harness between the hot and cold water. That will extend the life of the water heater almost double.
Mm-hmm. Joy from Manhattan.
Hello, Joy.
Yes. I have two doors that have come off the hinges in part, and the screw holes are widened.
Right.
And it's an old building.
Yes, we know your problem. We can go from here.
We're
way ahead of you on this one.
Yes.
What happens?
This is common, obviously.
This is so common. Here's a good one. You got toothpicks?
Yes.
You got some white glue?
Uh huh.
Stick the toothpicks into the hole with some white glue, and then screw the screw back in because the toothpicks will take up the space of the wood that has gone away.
Not plaster wood.
No, that doesn't work. That's not structural. Toothpicks will be structural.
Because it's real wood.
It's real wood. And it will bond, and when you glue it in there, once the glue and everything becomes monolithic, it'll hold fine. Actually, it doesn't work bad. If you don't have toothpicks, the bamboo skewers that you use for shish kebabs work really well, too.
They're great.
They work good, too. They have a lot of fiber in them.
Actually, the best toothpicks that I like using is the round toothpicks.
If you use a combination of the round ones and the flat ones to fill in all the spots.
Yeah, but dip the toothpicks into the glue and then stick them into the hole glue is all the way down in the bottom.
And then when you're tightening up the screw actually heats up the glue and it all bonds together.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you. That's an easy one.
And all you people should definitely have electric screwdrivers, drills rather, with screwdriver bits. And the battery-operated ones are great. I love them.
Mike from Westchester.
Hi. How are you guys?
You got to make it quick, Mike.
Okay. Yeah. I have a skylight issue where I need to basically replace not so much the skylight, which isn't compromised, but I think it's the gasketing.
Is it the gasket or the flashing around it?
It is the gasket.
Okay, then what you do is find the name brand of the brand, not name brand, the brand.
Where would that typically be stamped on it? Somewhere.
It's somewhere. You got to look around if there actually is a gasket. there is, if there's a gasket there, it's definitely a name somewhere on that on that skylight. If that's the worst, you can't get it, then you might actually have to bring in a window specialist who probably is a little more familiar than you are with the actual brand and could probably purchase the gasket for it. Also, if you look at the gasket may also be a common automotive gasket that you might be able to pull, you know, go to your automotive store and go around, because me and my father always browse through these kind of stores. You say, wow, that's what that is.
So we have run out of time, and there are a lot of calls coming in. So if people want to speak to you directly,
well,
Larry,
don't call me.
No, but they can write you at larry@ubell.com.
And please give me your telephone number, because if it's a complicated question, if it's a two-line question, I'll answer it in an email. But if it's complicated, I might end up giving you a call. So please give me your telephone number.
The Alvin and Lawrence Ubell, the gurus of how to. Also, Accurate Building Inspectors. We don't have time for the close, but we'll see you January 7th.
And do it safely.
On tomorrow's underreported segment, we'll take a look at the toll AIDS is taking in Ethiopia, and then a new biography of the influential and controversial Madame Chiang Kai-shek, plus a haunting debut novel about a Korean-American girl struggles to understand her parents, and the editor of The Economist makes some predictions about what's in store for 2007. By the way, if you've missed something on the show or just want to hear something again, you can listen to archives of past programs at WNYC.org. The Leonard Lopate Show is produced by Sarah English, Brenna Farrell, and Blake Neshek. Melissa Egan is the executive producer. We had help today from Fran Jacobs and Barbara Kahn. Debbie Daughtry was at the audio controls. I'm Leonard Lopate, your host. See you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to the Leonard Lopate Show from WNYC, New York Public Radio. You can hear everything we do and check out our other programs on demand at WNYC.org or on iTunes. This on-demand service is made possible by WNYC and its listeners, so please help support this free service by becoming a member at WNYC.org. And thanks.